let us become a little bit more quantitative and try to formulate numerical methods to calculate the price of an American option. Why numerical? Because there is no analytical solution to that problem, at least not without doing approximations, as I suggested in the previous section. There is other numerical methods than finite elements. You could use Monte Carlo techniques or finite differences, but finite elements, because of their variational formulation, here are particularly well suited, and therefore it makes sense to use the finite elements for that American problem. Instead of revisiting the Black and Scholes equation exactly in the same way as we did in the second chapter, let me extend a little bit the framework and here add a dividend payment for the underlying share. So now remember, the description of the underlying was assumed with log normal increments. Now I add, or actually subtract, the dividend yield from the drift rate and write the underlying price increment as the superposition of a deterministic component, which includes the drift minus the dividend yield, and a random component, which is proportional to the volatility. Now, let me create a portfolio with an American option and a number minus delta of the underlying. And I will use now the same trick as before. I will eliminate the randomness in order to calculate a deterministic value for the American option by solving a partial differential equation rather than a stochastic differential equation. So let me calculate the increment of the portfolio value by expressing this increment as a function of the increment in the log normal walk of the underlying share. If I now choose the number minus delta in such a way as to eliminate the random component, I can write down an inequality giving me the price increment of my portfolio, which includes, I recall, an American option minus a number delta of the underlying, write this incremental value to my portfolio and tell that it is equal or bigger than the risk-free return that I can earn on the bank. Why equal or bigger? In fact, in the European case, it would be a strict equality. But remember that now that for an American option, I have the choice to exercise it before the end of the contract, and therefore I may actually earn more than the interest rate on the bank. Therefore, I have an inequality rather than an equality. And now substituting the values for the interest rate into the equation, this gives me directly the Black and Scholes equation for American options, which in fact is now an inequality rather than an equality. In addition, the problem has to be solved knowing that the terminal condition, the terminal payoff, should always be lower than the solution. That means I have always the possibility to exercise this option with the terminal payoff. And therefore, in addition to this American Black and Scholes equation, I have to satisfy a so-called free boundary condition. It is a condition that the solution has to be above a certain value. In fact, in mathematics, this is called an obstacle problem. You could imagine such an obstacle problem for a rubber band. Imagine having nothing else than myself to play with here, that I want to attach a rubber band here from my shoulders and going above my head. You can easily visualize how this rubber band would adapt itself around the head. But the point here where the rubber band will actually touch the head are ill-determined. And this is a free boundary problem which has to be solved without knowing exactly which are the points of contact. To solve this free boundary problem, which is a standard problem in mathematics, it is useful, again, to do the transformation into log-normal variables. So let's change from financial variables to log-normal variables, and this transformation is really identical to what we've seen for European options, since the equation is also almost the same, except that now I have an inequality rather than an equality, and that I have a constraint to satisfy. Having done so, I am ready now to solve the obstacle problem in normalized variables. In fact, the general technique to address these problems can be found in the course on numerical methods, and I let you look more precisely into the method for the obstacle problem in the second course on this website. Here I only apply the recipe, and you'll see how you can formulate the finite element approximation exactly by following that recipe. First, instead of dealing with the equation as I had before, I write down a complementary problem, multiplying the equation, the inequality I had before, by the constraint, the free boundary condition. Of course, if both have to be satisfied, still the linear complementary problem will also be satisfied. The solution U has to be larger than the constraint C, and therefore the first term will always be larger or equal to zero, and the second term will also be larger and equal to zero if my solution satisfies the Black-Scholes equation. I still have to keep the additional constraint that the solution has to be larger than the constraint, since the both terms could actually turn negative and still satisfy the inequality. Now let me follow the spirit of Galerkin's approach, and I will use a test function to test my differential problem. And therefore, I introduce now a test function V, which also satisfies my problem. So I look for a test function in the same solution space as the solution itself. And therefore, I can also write, by construction, an inequality for this test function. So I obtain a linear complementary form for my function V. Now the trick here consists in subtracting the second, or subtracting the first equality from the second. If I do so, and then integrate this over the domain where the solution is sought, then I can formulate an equivalent variational principle, which is still an inequality, but now depends on the constraint, on the free boundary condition, only in an implicit manner. In fact, I subtracted the C from both equations, and therefore it does not appear anymore explicitly in the equation. It appears only implicitly through the choice of my function U and V. If I now follow exactly the same recipes as I followed previously, I can integrate by parts and substitute the finite element decomposition for the functions U and V, integrate with respect to time, and finally write linear problem, which remains an inequality that has to be satisfied in order to solve for the solution of the American problem. And in fact, this, apart from the inequality which has to be satisfied, the problem looks almost the same as the European problem. In fact, you can prove that this linear complementary form, with the very first term remaining and the inequality, if this holds and the constraint is satisfied, then, in fact, the inequality is an equality, provided that you satisfy the constraints. So I don't give the proof here, but simply substitute an equal sign for the inequality, and by doing so, I obtain now a solution for my American option problem using so-called successive over relaxations, as I use for the European problem. But here, in addition, I have to project the solution onto the possible solutions. That means I will force the solution not to drop below the free boundary constraint. This is a so-called projected SSOR method, which you can check out in the APET how it is solved. It is relatively simple. It's only through a simple condition when I iterate. Having done so, I can implement now my solution both for the European and the American contract, and if I show here only the core of the solver, not dealing with the transformation into log normal variables and back, you see that the problem simply consists in setting up the matrix A and B to calculate my linear problem, and then to solve either with an SSOR solver or projected SSOR solver, depending on whether you have a European or an American contract. The boundary conditions, of course, are slightly different, since you will have to deal now with the constraints as well for the boundary conditions. I'll let you execute the calculation now with the applet and compare how, in fact, the European and the American solver work and how they give different results, even though it is the same matrices that you're using and it's only the SSOR solver which is either projected or not. I'll let you play also with the numerical parameters with the implicit time quadrature, time theta parameter, and the tunable quadrature, which is the tuned quad parameter, which are numerical parameters that should not affect the solution if you are converged. Also note that you can solve for the problem, the Black-Scholes problem, using the financial variables rather than the log normal variables. In fact, if you do so, you will get rid of these oscillations which appear because of the interpolation you do for relatively low values of the shares. Therefore, the output actually looks nicer if you solve in the financial variables. You're allowed to do so with finite elements because you don't run into the instability problem which we sketched for finite differences. However, remember that for low values of the shares, the precision and the approximation given by the finite element discretization directly in financial variables will be much lower. Therefore, beware of the precision when you look at the very left side of the applet. So much for the finite element method for dealing with American options. And as I said, there is possibilities to use other methods like the Monte Carlo method to generalize it for American options as well. However, it is very much more subtle In fact, only to sketch the difficulty, imagine now a calculation with random walkers where you take one step and evolve a set of possible outcomes for this time step. You will see that after this time step, part of the possible outcomes will not satisfy the constraints anymore. And therefore, you need now, after one time step, for each realization, again to evolve a large number of random walkers to find out where the possible outcomes are. So if you start with 100 random walkers, at the second time step, you will have 100 times 100 simulations to perform. The third time step goes even further, and you will have an exponential growth of random walkers, which you cannot in practice afford. And therefore, you need something more clever, which will force the random walkers to satisfy the constraint a priori and not only a posteriori. We'll see, depending on the time we have to deal with these problems, I will add a section to the syllabus and produce the videos later on. I'll let you work now with